Welcome to Health Cetera, formerly Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. I'm Diana Mason, your host for today's program. You know, the United States trails other developed nations on most indicators of healthcare access, quality, efficiency, and clinical outcomes. Where we excel is in spending money on healthcare. We lead the world in per capita healthcare spending. That's the amount of money we spend per person in this country. Almost 20% of our nation's gross domestic product is for healthcare. Why is this a problem? Well, that's a lot of money that could be going to helping individuals, families, and communities to live healthier lives, whether through economic development of communities and job creation, or access to high-quality education at all levels, or the availability of affordable, high-quality, and nutritious foods, or creating safe places to exercise and play, or reducing environmental contaminants, or reducing income disparities. The other reason why our high level of healthcare spending is a problem is because it's not giving us a safer, high-quality healthcare spending. In 2013, medical errors were the third leading cause of death in the United States. Now, this unfortunate situation exists largely because our healthcare payment models are based upon the volume of care provided, whether healthcare visits, procedures, or tests, rather than on whether the care is adding value by promoting better health outcomes and actually preventing health problems and reducing the use of healthcare services. Today on Health Cetera, I'll be talking with two physicians who have developed an organization called Costs of Care that focuses on how to make our healthcare spending count, and have written a book about what is called value-based healthcare, healthcare that focuses not on excessive, unnecessary, and even harmful tests and procedures to generate revenue for healthcare providers and organizations, but rather pays for keeping people healthy and using healthcare resources wisely. But first, we want to talk about some new initiatives around caring for older adults, including one that emphasizes value-based care. Earlier this month, President Obama signed into law the PACE Innovation Act that would allow Medicare and Medicaid to expand the so-called PACE model, which is Programs for All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly. Under the PACE model of care, an interdisciplinary team coordinates and provides care to individuals 55 years of age and older who are certified to need a nursing home level of care. It uses what we call a capitated payment model, whereby a PACE program and providers receive a monthly per person payment by Medicare or Medicaid to keep the patient out of the nursing home, in their own home and community, and doing whatever is needed to keep them there. They do this by providing a day center there that people go to, transportation to that center and to health appointments, home care services, and other services to keep more than 90% of the enrollees in this program out of nursing homes. Today, there are 116 PACE programs in 32 states, serving about 35,000 enrollees. And the research substantiates that PACE programs provide excellent care, help people to remain independent in their own homes and communities longer, foster a higher quality of life, and achieve all of this at less than it would cost for the person to be in a nursing home. So why haven't we spread this throughout the country? Well, nurses are playing a role in helping to spread this model. Nurses have been instrumental in developing and advancing the PACE model. The First PACE program was started by nurse Jenny Chin Hansen in San Francisco in the 1970s to serve a largely Asian community. She integrated the social and medical models of health to help people remain as healthy and independent as possible in response to this Asian community's request for a different model of care. Dr. Chin Hansen worked with Medicare in the 1990s to write the rules for the PACE program under Medicare and Medicaid to be spread. Then the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, was passed and included demonstration projects to expand the PACE model. Eileen Sullivan Marks, who's now the dean at the New York University College of Nursing, led a Philadelphia PACE program called LIFE, Living Independent for Elders, that's been run by the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. She was actually selected at the end of her tenure as leading that program. She was selected to serve as a Health and Aging Policy Fellow, part of the American Political Science Association Congressional Fellowship, when the Affordable Care Act was first being implemented. And so she worked with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to rewrite the rules for expanding this PACE model. She and another New York University nurse colleague, Tara Cortez, who has more recently served as a Health and Aging Policy Fellow, were instrumental in drafting the legislation and the rules that would have bipartisan support from Congress. All of these nurses understand that health is not created in hospitals and nursing homes. It's fostered in supportive home and community environments that engage people in having the highest quality of lives possible. The capitated payment approach also enables the PACE programs and providers to focus on what people need and want to live healthy lives in their own homes and communities. Now, I want to share with you one example of how this capitated model works. And it's an example that Eileen Sullivan Mark shared with me from when she headed up the LIFE program at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. So as part of the PACE model, the School of Nursing was to assume all financial risk for care of the enrollees in their PACE program. And so they got a per person, per monthly fee from Medicare and Medicaid for each enrollee. And they were to provide all healthcare services for that each enrollee and keep them out of nursing homes. And in fact, in some cases, they were able to move them from nursing homes back into their own homes, people back into their own homes and communities. And so they have a day center and bring people using a van to come to the center from their homes. They provide home care services as needed for people who can't travel. And Eileen shared with me the story of how one summer, that was a very hot and humid summer in Philadelphia, there was one elderly woman who kept cycling in and out of the emergency department with respiratory problems. She was having extraordinary difficulties breathing. And they would fix her up in the emergency room, then send her home, and then she'd be back in. And these emergency room visits were costing a lot of money. And so that cost was being borne by the School of Nursing because it agreed to assume all financial risk for these enrollees for their care. And so the school did a deep dive on what's going on with this woman. How do we reduce her emergency room usage? Well, what they discovered when they did a deep dive with this woman on what's going on with her health and her home situation was that she lived in a housing complex that had no air conditioning. And she was having a real hard time breathing in this hot and humid summer. And so they decided to buy an air conditioner for her and installed that air conditioner. And guess what? It stopped that woman cycling in the ER. She no longer had trips to the emergency room. Now, this is a very seemingly simple fix. And the School of Nursing paid for that air conditioner because under a capitated fee model, they recognized that it was in their best interest to do so if they were going to reduce the costs of not preventing her emergency room visits. But think about your insurance company these days, and whether if you went to your insurance company and said, I have respiratory problems and I need an air conditioner and would like you to pay for it so I don't have to go to the emergency room. Very few insurance companies would pay for that. So it's, to me, a very simple, straightforward, but powerful example of how we have to change the payment models in this country away from paying for, you know, whatever tests and procedures and visits we can generate on you, to how to keep you healthy and how to address what you need and want to be healthy. And that's what the PACE model does. And so for older adults, this is a model that really should be expanded in other parts of the country, including the New York metropolitan region. Now, to find out about PACE programs in your state, go to www.medicare.gov, that's Medicare, medicare.gov, and put in the search box PACE, PACE, and it will bring up information on the PACE program, including a list of programs throughout the country by state. So that's the PACE program, an innovative model of care for older adults in this country that's being expanded. But there's another innovative model of care for older adults that I want to talk about, and that's Greenhouse. Most older adults want to age in place surrounded by family, friends, and familiar environments, but many can't. Maybe they lack the necessary help or are too frail to live alone and do require a more supportive, structured environment, but they don't want their independence to be taken away. They don't want to go to a nursing home. They just need some supportive help. And if you've read Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal, he talks about this greenhouse project and about how it's taking a model of care that's really not a biomedical, using a biomedical model. It's really using a functional model, a social model of health that says, you know, let's just provide the support that the individual wants. Let them keep making their decisions. And sometimes they might be not be the wisest decisions, but it's their decision to make. So a traditional nursing home used to be the only option, but now there's a growing movement that's taking this different approach to elder care, and it changes how older, frail adults live out their lives. And this is known as the Greenhouse Movement. Health Cetera co-producer Liz Siegert looks at how one traditional long-term care provider is taking the lead in transforming how older New Yorkers live and how others, older adults in this country, could be living.
I'm here with Dr. Audrey Weiner, President and CEO of Jewish Home Life Care. Audrey, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, we're here today to talk about something called greenhouses, and they're not what most people think of. They have nothing to do with plants. What exactly is a greenhouse?
The idea that in a greenhouse, plants can be nourished is the basis of this idea. So basically, a greenhouse is a home for older adults, and it's created in a way so that they, despite whatever disabilities and functional impairments they have, can flourish. And it's based on three premises. The first is that the environment itself is very important. So that if you imagine for a moment that you've got a 12-bedded large apartment, and each of those bedrooms has its own shower, and each of those bedrooms is around a central core. And that core contains the most fabulous big kitchen you've ever seen, with a giant island in the middle, as well as a countertop for preparation. A dining room where everybody in the family can fit, and in this case, it's the 12 elders who are living in the house, and the staff who are working there, and their families who come and visit. as well as a living room where people can gather and have entertainment and talk. There's also a den where if families come to visit and mom or dad is not well and they want to stay over, they can sleep in the den. So that's the environment. So we create this environment that's really about home, but unless we change the whole way we think about the staff, it's just a nice environment. And so the staff, who are trained by definition as certified nursing assistants, now receive an extra 120 hours of training. And that training is all about how do you create home? How do you cook the food? How do you do the light housekeeping? How do you engage the elders in conversation, in exercise, in activities? And how do you, as CNAs, certified nursing assistants, self-manage? So you're the ones who create your schedule for when you work and when you don't, rather than having the big nursing office do that. So that's the second piece, which is the roles and responsibilities of the people who work in the house, and they're being empowered. And then the third piece of all of this is the relationships. So these houses are built on something called deep knowing. And the staff, who we call adirot, which means noble in Hebrew, have extraordinary relationships with the elders and with their family members, where they know so much about them. How do they want us to address them? Do they want us to call them Mrs. Cohen? Do they want us to call them Mildred? What do they feel is both respectful and comfortable? Those three things, the deep knowing, the self-managed work team, and the creation of this environment, which is all about home, is what makes a greenhouse a greenhouse.
It's quite a change from the traditional nursing home that most of us are familiar with.
It absolutely is. It turns it on its head and says, the director of nursing, the administrator, you're important. But it's much more important about who is on that house taking care of these elders every day and what that relationship is about.
So we should clarify that this is not a physical house. You are experimenting with this in a traditional setting that one might think of as an apartment building or an institutional setting, but you're creating these pods of group settings.
That is correct. In other places in the country that tend to be more rural, there's enough land to create this, what I would call, 12-bedroom single-family home. But in New York, where we now have three houses in our Mamaroneck campus called Sarah Newman, it's in a three-story building that is a nursing home and looks just like the garden apartments that it is contiguous with.
What does this do for the residents in terms of what we know as patient-centered care?
What we take for total granted, because we have control and don't need assistance around getting up out of bed, deciding whether we have a bath or a shower, deciding whether we want that shower in the morning or before we go to bed, when we have breakfast, what we have for breakfast. For elders who have lost so much, now think about people who are in a nursing home, right? They've lost a degree of their function. They've probably lost their partner. They're no longer working, so they've lost that economic status and prestige and focus. They've probably lost lots of their friends. And that assumes they haven't also lost memory and vision and hearing. So things that we take for granted are really important in terms of their being able to control and direct. So this issue of let me as the elder direct what time I get up, whether I have physical therapy or I have my hair done, if I want to participate in an activity or not, and the ultimate sets of decisions, which are how I want to live the last months and days of my life is critical, and it's what we all want.
So you're taking the institution portion out of it.
Yes, we are. What we're retaining is the skill set and the doctors and the nurses to provide the support that the elders need. What we're taking out of it is the institution's view that it has primacy over all decisions.
Does this require additional training for the nurses, for the social workers as well?
And for the administrators. So it requires 6 days of training for all of those people who might be in what we think of as supervisory positions. Because thinking about how you're going to adjust your vision to how the elder wants to live their life, how you as the administrator are going to change your style from supervisory to coaching and mentoring, while still meeting all of the state and federal codes that are required, is a bit of a challenge. And so the training is a critical part of this.
How does the cost of a greenhouse compare to traditional nursing home settings?
It's a very good question. On the operating side, we think that the cost is almost the same. One is able to have more staff work in the house because you have less staff work on the tray line, mm-hmm. or less staff work in housekeeping. And so one of the important things is to offer the staff in housekeeping or food service the opportunity to become trained to work in the house. But ultimately, because these houses are self-managed, you need less supervisory staff. We are also anticipating, and haven't had enough time to study this yet, that there'll be less things like wasted food, plate waste, less use of food supplements, because the food itself being cooked at the exact moment you're going to eat it is so much more appetizing, and you get to have exactly what you're in the mood for at that moment.
How does one become eligible to go into a greenhouse?
This is not independent housing. This is not assisted living. The people who are receiving care in the greenhouses are fragile. And so the very first thing you have to do is meet that criteria. And then we will evaluate you, and if you meet the criteria, if we have a bed, you can come and live there. But most likely you will go on the waiting list to be there because there are lots of people who want to live in this kind of setting.
If this model seems so practical and so logical, why aren't more places doing this?
I think that there's a number of reasons. The capital costs in terms of plumbing, electrical, purchase of appliances, and just square footage is very, very significant. The second issue is, you know, there are lots of good nursing homes that just may not be enlightened. So I think it's the responsibility of people like you to ask these questions so that communities can start to ask this question. And administrators and boards of directors like ours at Jewish Home to say, there's a better way to do it, and we owe it to our elders to do it that way.
Many people are also surprised when they are finally admitted into a nursing home that Medicare doesn't cover most of the costs. What would a typical stay cost out of pocket?
One of the things that we know is that about 90% of the people come into our system directly from the hospital, directly after a bad thing happened. And by a bad thing, I mean they've fallen, they've needed surgery, they've had a stroke. And the families are so often shocked that this has happened and haven't had the opportunity to think about what any of this means. So it's always a crisis. So the family as a group has often not had time to have the conversation about how are we going to plan for what it's going to mean to care for mom. So one of the crises that our country is not yet facing is how are we going to finance long-term care? If, in fact, mom has fallen and needs rehab, while she is in our rehab unit, Medicare, or the Medicare Advantage plan, will typically pay for the rehab stay. Medicare, in fact, is there for what's called the post-acute or rehab time. What becomes much more challenging is if mom now needs to stay in the nursing home and can't go home. And what is likely to happen is that the family hasn't done any planning, and she will then pay privately, and, you know, perhaps the cost might be $450 a day, until such time as she spends down to the Medicaid eligibility limits. And most nursing homes will help her to fill out the papers, etc. But for the family, that means, at least in New York, getting 5 years of bank statements and other documentation to prove that mom is eligible.
So again, it's important, as we remind our listeners, to start planning for things like this now.
It's important to start to have the conversations. And, you know, those conversations range from everything that can feel less threatening, like, mom, I noticed that you've got some area rugs. Right? What if we picked up those area rugs? Because I'm a little concerned that they might be a tripping hazard. Or I noticed that in your cabinets in your kitchen, you still have food on the top shelf. Maybe we could rearrange it so that the food is easier for you to reach. So those are often less threatening. But ultimately, families really need to have those tough conversations about healthcare proxies. And all of this takes time. Now imagine mom is 90. The kids are 60 and 65. They should be having those conversations with their kids.
And most people don't know how.
Absolutely. But if ever there was a conversation that Americans needed to have, this is it.
Now, I understand you're breaking ground in Manhattan very soon.
Yes, we hope to break ground next year with the idea of building 22 greenhouses. There will be two houses per floor. You have to think about this as a tall apartment building, and 11 floors of greenhouses. And the building itself will be 20 stories, so that there'll be 5 floors where people come and have rehab. There will be a public floor where there'll be a cafe and an auditorium and a spa where you can have your nails done. There'll be a beautiful rooftop garden where we hope that youngsters in the community will work with our elders to actually grow some herbs and some vegetables that we can use in all of these kitchens. And there will be a garden on the first floor that not only the elders and their family members can visit, but we also can have people who live in the neighborhood come and visit.
How would somebody get on the waiting list for a place like this?
Well, one of the things that they would do is actually talk with our admission staff. And should they want to, they can call 212-870-5000. They can go on our website to learn more about it. There's two other things that are going to make these houses very special. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking about them as affinity houses. The first is that in Manhattan particularly, but in many large cities around the country, there really is an issue about how elders who are LGBTQ are going to be cared for when they need nursing home care. And one of the tragedies of today, and hopefully it won't be a tragedy going forward, is that many elders who are gay feel the need to go back in the closet when they go into an institution. And we've worked with SAGE, which is the organization in New York that is focused 100% on the needs of this population, to design a special greenhouse for this group of people. And these elders, not that we're saying you have to live in a special house, but if they want to live in a special house, we'll be able to do that. And all of the staff in our nursing homes will be trained, just like they are today, to work with this population. We are also going to have at least 3 houses that are kosher. If you think about the structure of a house, it's so much easier to be responsive to the specific needs of a group of 12 people than 514 people, which is what we have today.
Now, we have an election coming up in about a year. What would you tell the candidates about the need for elder care, for long-term care in this country?
What I would ask them to do is to put the politics of health care reform and Obamacare on the side, and to think about the fact that America owes it to our elders to have a cogent, effective policy on financing long-term care, and to think about what their policy initiatives would be, and to actually have that be part of the debate.
Dr. Audrey Weiner, thank you so much for joining us today. Dr. Weiner is president and CEO of Jewish Home Life Care, and they're doing some wonderful work with greenhouses.
That was co-producer Liz Siegert speaking with Dr. Audrey Weiner about Jewish Home Life Care's greenhouse movement. You can find out more on this program by visiting their website at http://jewishhome.org. That's jewishhome.org. Again, to find a greenhouse facility, go to www.thegreenhouseproject.org. That's thegreenhouseproject.org. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of HealthCetera, that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at our blog, HealthCetera, by going to www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and live streaming at www.wbai.org. Next up, a discussion of costs of care.